and to talk about the last, well, 3-4 days and how the roster is shaping up as we approach training camp less than a week away and the start of the season under a month away from The Athletic, Blake Murphy. Blake, thanks for the time today.
Yeah, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Blake. Listen, yeah. let's kind of just look big picture maybe, Blake, before we break it down to each guy. Raptors a week ago to this day versus the Raptors today. What's your assessment, your take on how they look and the way that Masai and Bobby Webster had to kind of shift and adjust and sort of juke after the moves involving Ibaka and Marc Gasol?
Yeah, it's it looks a little different. I was kind of approaching the offseason figuring that they would, and this report was out there that they did do this with Serge Ibaka, a heavier one-year deal for one of their centers to be back. And then with that other spot, I thought maybe they'd take a flyer on a young guy like a Harry Giles, a Noah Vonleh, something like that. It certainly sounds like Serge and Mark preferred to go the ring route and the LA route, and in Serge's case, get a little bit more money than he could have got on a 1 year, which you can't fault those guys for. But I do think, I think the Raptors pivoted pretty well. And I think, taking care of one of your guys in Chris Boucher is a nice signal to send. I think the combination of Aaron Baines and Alex Len, it's not Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, but that's not a bad center rotation, especially when you factor in, Boucher and the ability to play some minutes small. So I think, I think they've done a good job maintaining a certain floor in the front court. I don't know if the ceiling with those guys shoots as high as playoff Marc Gasol with the Celtics series aside, what his IQ brings at both ends of the floor, and they certainly don't have that big to soak up possessions like Serge did on offense. But there's a floor there with guys like Baines and Len, and I think, we all know that this was probably going to be a bit of a transition year. So just kind of stabilizing that makes sense as a plan B to me.
Blake, and it's funny, before you came on, I was saying the same thing. A lot of people, friends, fans, people saying, well, they've lost so much. And when you look at the East overall, and Eric and I were kind of, hypothesizing about this, I don't think, other than Milwaukee making the moves that they made, that a whole lot of people have really jumped up and improved a ton in the East. Other than Milwaukee, I mean, Miami kind of re-signed Dragic. Udonis Haslam will be back for year $9 million. Mm-hmm. The Nets have this great potential, as do the Sixers with a new coach, and the Nets with new players, but they haven't been on the court. Takes a while to learn a new system. I don't think the Raptors are starting from a place that's any worse than any of the other teams. I mean, people might look at other teams with more potential, but I don't think the Raptors are starting from a bad place.
No, I don't think so. And I think the East is going to shape up fairly similarly to last year. You may be most of the East last year, we talked about it being a top six and then kind of ugly outside of that. I think you can add Brooklyn and make it a top seven. Indiana, maybe if they're healthier, they're a bit more forward. Like, I think they were a clear six last year. Maybe they're a bit more formidable. But really, yeah, I'm with you. I thought Milwaukee obviously made the additions they made. And then I've been pretty impressed, not to fall for this for a third or fourth straight year with Philadelphia, but I feel like they had a pretty strong offseason, kind of cashing in the Horford chip and building a roster of supporting pieces that better fit Embiid and Ben Simmons. Now, we'll see how all that works with the new coaching staff and everything, but the injection of kind of shooting and youth around those guys could make Philly a threat. But I thought Boston hasn't had the best offseason through the draft and free agency here. And like you said, Miami's basically running it back, which is good, but they lean a little older in some key positions. So, I think the Raptors will be in the mix there, and I think the East probably shapes up as a top seven, and you could probably split that into two tiers, and the Raptors might be in that second tier, but anywhere, 3 to 6 in the East, I don't think would be all that surprising.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Blake, and again, we're speaking with Blake Murphy from The Athletic. When you talk about the top six, top seven, whatever, outside of, and again, we're making a big assumption here, who knows, injuries, obviously that's always the intangible, and we never really know how something's going to play out, but if we just, all the three of us, assume that maybe Milwaukee's the top team, as they have been for the last 2 years, if there's not a ton of separation between, 2-3 and then 6-7, to me, it's kind of like all bets are off once the playoffs come. Other than the fact that maybe one team's got home court if it goes seven games, you know, a 3-6 could very easily be a 4-5 matchup where there's very little separation. And is this, Blake, the year that the Raptors are having this year that many thought they would have last year? And we've just sort of kind of delayed that sort of transition year by a year, and perhaps maybe people just kind of weren't prepared for this to the same extent that maybe they should have been last year.
Yeah, I think it's funny how our expectations change when you know, a team overperforms our expectations, where, you know, as far back as when the Raptors acquired Kawhi, I've been writing things like, hey, if they, you know, even if all goes well, if Kawhi leaves until 2021, there's not going to be a clear path to, like, adding to this core. It's going to be a bit of a transition. And then I wrote that again after Kawhi left it. And then the Raptors last year, they were just so good that I think everyone's expectations to where they'd been before. And, you know, maybe collectively we lost sight a little bit of, you know, there's a legacy cost to going all in for a championship. And it's that you need to regroup for a minute, and you need to find the pieces around your next core for your next contention window. And I think the Raptors are still in the process of that. And you know, last year, some of that was Kyle Lowry just refusing to age like we'd expect the 35-year-old point guard to age. And maybe he does that again. But yeah, I think, you know, to your point about how even the East is going to be, you could go back and look at the bubble playoffs and look at how Milwaukee, Miami, Toronto, and Boston shape up. And depending on how those four matchups or how those four teams matched up series to series, you know, any one of those four teams may have gotten through to the finals if they got the right matchup, where I think, you know, Boston was the worst matchup for Toronto, Miami was the worst matchup for Milwaukee, but Milwaukee may have beaten Boston and Toronto may have beaten Miami, and you get this kind of rock, paper, scissors thing going on. I think the East could shape up like that again, and it's why, you know, I know there are some people who have that mentality of like, if you're not competing for a championship, you should blow it all up. But first of all, that's not really realistic a lot of the time. But also, you know, we've seen how tight the East is, and we've seen how you get the right playoff matchup and you get the right bounces. And, you know, a guy like Pascal, a guy like Fred, a guy like OG, they take little steps and suddenly, you know, you're in that 3-4-5 mix again and could make a run to the second or third round of the playoffs. Like, it's not the gap between first round team and third round team in the East right now is just not that wide.
Blake, totally agree with you. I mean, Eric knows this line. I've used it for years and people have heard me say it. You know, you buy the house, you pay the mortgage. Like, when you get a championship,
yep,
like, you can't just expect to win one every year after that. There are going to be changes. Guys will leave. You'll have to retool. And the trick is to kind of like what the Raptors are doing now, try to kind of patch it on the fly and then get a break. Who knows what trades might come in February or March and you know, what moves might be made or what injuries might happen and stuff like that. So I totally agree with you. And look, I think the one thing that's being underplayed here, and I know in the case of Philadelphia that, you know, they've got a new coach. And, you know, Milwaukee, they've got new players to integrate, key players to integrate. Toronto still has a lot of its core guys that are, you know, championship guys that carry the load. Kyle, Fred, Pascal, you know, OG, Norm. These guys are still here. And they do have a guy who was coach of the year last year. And I think some people are forgetting about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially early in the season with how quick this turnaround is, how short training camp's going to look, you know, I think these teams that do have continuity and familiarity are going to see a boost. You know, I would imagine, you know, the shine comes off of that by the time playoffs roll around because teams have had 70 games together to get familiar. But I do think, yeah, there's something to that, especially early in the year. It wouldn't really surprise me if the Raptors come out to a really hot start because, you know, their four of their starting five and their top bench guy all know the system and know how to play with each other and hit the ground running. You know, I'm sure that's the task for Nick Nurse and his staff this next couple of weeks is, okay, how do you get Baines and Len and Bembry and those and Malachi Flynn up to speed quick enough that you can rely on them? Because you don't want to do what you did last year with how compressed the schedule is going to be this year. If you guys remember back, Nick Nurse was running a 7-man rotation at the start of the last season because he didn't trust any of the new guys. That's something he might have to loosen up on a little bit as guys get up to speed. But, yeah, big picture, I think that continuity with a lot of, you know, Boucher. We can include Boucher in there too with, you know, the minutes that he played last year. I think that continuity could be pretty helpful. And, you know, whether that's a factor only for the first month of the season or whether that helps you, you know, maybe that's the difference between home court and not home court in the first round in the East, or whatever home court looks like by May.
Speaking with Blake Murphy from The Athletic. Blake, I'm going to make a couple of assumptions here. I may be wrong. We'll find out, I guess, in a week or so, a couple of weeks as training camp unfolds. I'm going to assume that right now it's at least penciled in that Aaron Baines is your starting center alongside Pascal Siakam in the front court, and I'm thus assuming that you've got Len Boucher coming off the bench. But putting aside the two new faces in Len and Baines, where does Chris Boucher fit into this mix with the new contract, with the new role, and with obviously more expectation heaped upon him? I you know, I'm not necessarily interested in whether it's 15 minutes versus 22 minutes or whatever it is, but how does his role evolve within this team, you think, this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's time for him to go from, hey, we're calling on you to give us a spark when things are bad, to, hey, we're relying on you every night. And that's a tough adjustment, and it wasn't something Boucher did seamlessly last year. There were times where he fell out of the rotation because, you know, it just wasn't there night to night. And then he'd sit for three games and then he'd come out of nowhere for a huge game, you know, against Phoenix or something like that. And, you know, it's great to have guys with the mentality that they can shake off a couple DNPs and contribute like that. But the challenge for Boucher is now they're going to need him every night, whether he ends up playing backup center minutes or he's technically the backup power forward or he sees some times with the starters in funkier lineups, whatever it is, you know, the nights are hopefully, you know, the Raptors are hoping the nights where you can't call on Chris Boucher or he only gives you four or five mediocre minutes are gone. And he's about to turn 28 early in the season. And I know that his basketball experience is still not super rich, but he's at that age now and he's being paid now where the Raptors are going to expect this every night. So that's the big challenge for him is, you know, you can be the jump between being a 10 and 12 minute energy guy and being a guy that your coach is relying on for stability every night. That's a big jump and it's a big mental jump as much as anything. I've been high on Boucher as a player for, you know, going back to his G League time now. And I think this is, you know, obviously skill wise, you want to see that three drop a little bit more. You maybe want him to add some strength. But I do really think, you know, for him, a lot of it is the mental night-to-night challenge. And can you be a guy who is there every night for Nick Nurse? And, you know, it's not that kind of carousel of, like, is it Boucher tonight? Is it Rondae Hollis-Jefferson tonight? Is it O'Shea Brissett tonight? You know, Nick Nurse is going to want that to be Chris Boucher every night now.
Blake, you mentioned G League, and again, you know, when you're talking about kind of reloading or retooling for a championship, how much should we be, I wouldn't say leery, be aware of and be cognizant of the developmental factor? Because you look at, you know, a couple of the guys that are carrying the ball right now, a few of them, like Norm, Fred, Pascal, all came from G League development. And I look at the guys that have been drafted. We haven't seen a lot of DeJuan Hernandez. I'd really like to see this kid play because I think he's got something. And then when you look at what they did from the salary structure, next year's a pretty big free agent year. Like, people are talking about Giannis like he's the only guy. But, you know, like, theoretically, you could have Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan. You could have, I mean, some of them have been here as an address already, but you could have a lot of free agents out there that you could choose from that aren't named Giannis.
Yeah, so I think, you know, from the developmental side, obviously it's going to be a challenge. We don't know what the G League is going to look like. There are almost no details out there about that. Like, I would assume if there's a G League, the 905 are kind of Tampa-based with the Raptors. But I don't think that that's something that you can, you know, pencil in to be as big a factor as it's been for you in recent years. And the reality is you look at these salaries, and you mentioned DeJuan, and this applies to even a Matt Thomas or Jalen Harris, their second-round pick. I think a lot of these guys, and this is going to be great for internal competition, but maybe isn't the best thing, you know, for everyone kind of looking over their shoulder. But some of these guys are going to be playing for their spot on the team the next year. And whether, you know, whether the Raptors get a Giannis or, you know, end up going for two or three of the kind of second tier guys with that space they've maintained, you know, all these guys aren't going to be back. So if you're Paul Watson, if O'Shea ends up on the roster, DeJuan, even Matt Thomas. All of these guys are playing not only for minutes now, but to factor in to the future of this team, where, you know, we've seen it play out with Kawhi, and we've seen other teams not do this as well. If you're going to take the big swings at free agents like that, and you're going to pay your guys like Pascal and Fred and later OG, the money they're worth, you've got to find these cheaper gems at the end of the roster, and you've got to keep developing them. So, you know, there's a lot of leverage on those developmental guys beyond just this year and their own careers. It's, you know, are you a piece for us in 2021, or are you a casualty of us trying to keep that flexibility open?
Hey, Blake, we're up against the clock. I just wanted to ask a real quick one here. What do you think in terms of whether the Raptors are done, or do you think that there's more to come in the next week, week and a half, whatever, as camp opens, et cetera? Or is this the roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the roster, short of maybe one of the non-guaranteed guys getting cut and they fill that spot. But they're going to want to add a couple camp guys that could be G-leaguers too, and that second two-way spot's still open. So, you know, I have Jalen Harris, their second-round pick, earmarked for that. But maybe they bring O'Shea back into camp, and maybe they sign one or two undrafted free agents to compete for that spot. A couple interesting Canadian two-ways out there, too, who are free, in Mariel Shayok and Kyle Alexander from the Heat. So possible there's a little competition at the end of the roster, but I think the big stuff's done.
Hey, Blake, thanks for the time today, man. We appreciate this.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks,
there
Blake.
There is Blake Murphy from The Athletic. And, Jonesy, one of the conversations we'll have to have in future days and future shows as well, and we don't have time to get into it now, but, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot as it relates to Terrence Davis and the legal issues that have been swirling around him the last 6 weeks or so. And that's a story certainly going into camp as it relates to a guy that played a fairly significant role last year and somebody that you thought could maybe be a budding piece for your future. And then what becomes of him? And then does that have a trickle-down effect to whether it be Matt Thomas, even Stanley Johnson looking to sort of reclaim his career after a sort of a loss season last year, and then even another guy that was banged up a ton last year in Patrick McCaw as a depth guard who's now going to be banging out for minutes with a Malachi Flynn that's going to want to be nipping at the heels of Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry. So lots to chat about as it relates to the Raptors and the amount of people that are there speaking to what Blake just said about the competition. We've got to take the break, Jonesy. We'll come back with more Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.